Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the weekly podcast by Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I am Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. It was a dramatic couple of weeks for Sharafuddin Agadoyev, a Europe-based leading Tajik activist who is a member of the Tajik opposition party in exile called Group 24. The story starts from Agadoyev's trip to Moscow, apparently to meet with Russian authorities. Plan was to get the blessing of Moscow to engage with the Tajik migrant workers in Russia. But things quickly turned upside down as soon as he landed in Moscow. Soon he got picked up by Russian secret forces and then put on the plane on his way to Dushanbe, where he says he was tortured, humiliated and forced to give false confessions. Now Sharafuddin is back in Europe and he's joining us today to tell us his story. Also, I have a panel of experts so that we can expand the debate by talking about what does this all say about the bigger picture. First, let me introduce my panel. Sharafuddin Agadoyev, member of the banned Tajik opposition party in exile, Group 24. Victoria Nadezhdina, the attorney of Sharafuddin Agadoyev. Mahmoudjan Faiz Rahman, the spokesperson of Tajikistan's another banned opposition party, Islamic Renaissance Party of Tajikistan, also known as IRPG. Steve Severdlou, Human Rights Watch, Central Asia researcher, and Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. Very warm welcome, colleagues.
Welcome. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. So let's start with you, Sharafuddin. I understand you don't feel comfortable in talking in English, so feel free to speak in Russian. I'm glad that Victoria agreed to translate your comments into English. Also, it will be the first time we are doing the show in this format, so let's see how it goes. Yeah, also, colleagues, though I have so many questions for Sharafuddin, I thought what we will do is, in the beginning, we will listen to Sharafuddin's story, where I highly encourage all you to jump in and ask questions, and I don't like to be the only one asking questions. So later on, we will let Sharafuddin go, unless he wants to stay, so that we can expand the discussion about what his story tells us about today's Tajikistan, plight of other activists and government and its intentions. All right. So, Sharafuddin, welcome back. It must be painful to talk about this, but it is the story needs to be shared. So tell us, please, why did you go to Russia and what happened there?
So in July 2018, Russian people representing the very high-level politicians of Russian government started conversation, negotiations with Sharafuddin Agadoyev about possibility of for Tajik opposition to settle in Russian Federation territory and to start their activity. They are considering that in Russian Federation there are almost 2 million Tajik labor migrants who live and work there. For Tajik opposition, it was important to have opportunity to work in Russian Federation and to prepare like a platform for upcoming elections in 2020, both on parliamentary and presidential level. And Tajik opposition, represented by Sharafuddin Agadoyev, wanted to have official permission by Russian government to work within these Tajik labor migrants on the territory of Russia. So the Tajik labor migrants have opportunity to participate freely in upcoming elections.
Почти 2 миллиона – это 50% избирателей, которые находятся за рубежом. Они решено свои права, чтобы использовать.
The current situation is the following. There are only three places in the whole Russia where Tajik citizens can go and to express their right for to choose candidates to parliament of Tajikistan and to choose their president. And these 2 million Tajik labor migrants living in Russia comprises almost 50% of the whole electorate. So the whole number of Tajik citizens who has the right to vote. And in order to somehow improve the situation and to give more wide opportunity for Tajik migrants to have places, to have opportunity to do it freely, without pressing, without any fearing, it was very important to prepare this platform on the territory of Russian Federation for upcoming elections.
Российская Федерация постоянно поддерживает режим диктатуры Омара Рахмона для того, чтобы дальнейшие Вот когда оппозиция там.
What we can see now that if someone from Tajik society based in Russia tries to raise their voice and to express their civil position in terms of social or political matters in relation to Tajikistan, we can see that Russian security officials in cooperation with Tajik security officials try to put a pressure for such people and try to shut them down. And we also know about cases of forcible extradition from territory of Russian Federation to Tajikistan only because of people are trying to be active in civil society and to try to express their opinion. And we aimed to convince Russian officials on a high level to stop this practice and to give opportunity for Tajik citizens living in Russia to express their right, to exercise their right, and to have opportunity to vote freely without fear
okay.
being extradited.
Can I interrupt here? Just a quick question. You know, Sharafuddin, for Russia letting you work with these Tajik migrant workers there, it means that they are taking stand against government in favor of you. What made you think that Russia is sincere about this proposal that you got from them?
Мы думаем, что если дальнейшее сотрудничество или совместное подавление таджикского общества или оппозиция.
I will try to sum up. So the current situation, due to a lot of different problems on different areas and different levels in Tajikistan, creates a high level of risk of destabilization in Tajikistan, and that brings the dangerous situation, the risks of destabilization of the whole region. And we thought that if Russian officials continue to support this regime of Imam Ali Rahmon and support this very dangerous situation happening with Tajik citizens, that will somehow support this destabilization of the region, and Russian officials should understand this. So we tried to convince them that it is a necessity of the time to change the way of ruling of country in Tajikistan, to turn it into peaceful, democratic way. And we tried to convince them, and we believed that Russia also changed their mind and also want some changes, some democratic changes in Tajikistan in order to keep security on within the region. And but now we understand that it was just another plan. Russia didn't change anything in mind. It was just a trap. It was just a bad plan for opposition leaders.
Yeah. Sharafuddin, you said that you believed in Russia at the beginning, but you also left a recorded video of yourself to be released in case you are in trouble. So what you had in mind when you decided to record that warning video?
Ну, я постоянно знал и понимал, что Россия не та страна, можно доверять.
So, yes, I believed in Russia's good position, yeah, but at the same time, I understood that I cannot trust completely. And also, my co-worker, Muhyiddin Kabiri, leader of opposition group in exile, he also advised me not to trust till the end, not to trust completely. So I just wanted to somehow secure myself and prepare this video. However, I was enthusiastic, and I really believe that there are opportunities for changes. But still, I thought, considering that we had a lot of cases previously with many people, with many activists who were forcibly extradited to Tajikistan, and seeing these cases, I thought that it could be something similar with me. But still, I really believe that Russian officials don't want to support Imam Ali Rahmon's regime anymore.
I also read in your Asianet interview that on the plane you were tortured, humiliated, you were blindfolded. This part of the story is widely shared by now. So tell me, once you were there in Tajikistan, it looks like the authorities tried to work with you. When things turned messy?
Когда я пошел на их условия, потому что были три условия и физические установления.
Ну да, вы начали записывать видео.
Да.
Дальше.
После, когда мы записали видео, они уже начинали облегчать ситуацию.
So yes, from the first day when I agreed for their terms and conditions, we started working and they started recording these orchestrated videos. But after 20th of February, after publishing my video statement that I prepared before going to Moscow, when this video was published, everything changed. So their initial plan of showing to the international community that I returned willingly by my own will was broken at that moment.
Actually, I'm ready to expand the discussion, but is there anything, colleagues, you would like to ask Sharafuddin before I expand it?
I want to ask Sharafuddin, what do you think who was the mastermind of this operation? Who was Yakimov or Rahimzadeh, or higher than them?
Когда мы поговорили с Якимовым, где-то 5 часов около.
When I first talked to Yatimov, who is the head of Security Committee of Tajikistan, for the first time on 16th of February, we talked about 5 hours, and he indirectly confirmed that this plan, this operation, is thanks to Peshwo. Peshwo, the name of President Emomali Rahmon. However, other generals, three generals of the security services of Tajikistan, whom I talked as well, they confirmed directly that this operation belongs totally to Emomali Rahmon.
А здесь операция была большая, потому что они хотели, основной их цель был Муйдин Кабир, я был второй цель.
This actually was initially a big plan, a big operation, and authorities aimed to catch not only Sharafuddin, but the first aim was Muhyiddin Kabiri, and Sharafuddin was the second.
Потому что когда второй раз, они три раза попросили, чтобы Муйдин Кабири прийти, это важно, потому что очень...
During arrangement of the second trip to Moscow, the Russian side insisted several times that Muhyiddin Kabiri also go to Russia with Sharafuddin.
Когда это слышал Муйдин Кабири, уже подозревал, что здесь что-то нет, мне сказал, что воздержать, ну, я не мог воздержать, я хотел, чтобы...
However, due to this strong insistence from Russian side, Muhyiddin Kabiri had suspicions that something strange, something going not good, and he even warned Sharafuddin maybe not to go, to be careful, maybe not to do this.
Ну, Муйдин понял, что здесь они готовятся к какой-то заговор, ну, не до конца, ну, после моей...
So Muhyiddin really had a lot of suspicions about all these trips, and it was not clear for him, and he didn't trust it completely, and he refused to go. And when Sharafuddin came alone to Russia, they just decided at least to catch one of target.
Okay, Bruce, Steve, any questions from your side?
Well, the story is remarkable. I mean, there's 1,000 questions because there are so many actors involved and so many stages.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, in many ways, this case is not unique, but for one,
definitely
one future, which is that Sharafuddin is with us today, thankfully.
Yeah.
I think because this is the first time of a number of disappearances and extraditions and forced returns and kidnappings from Russia, from Turkey and Belarus. But this is the first case we know of where the Tajik government did this to somebody that had refugee status in a European country.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, that really gives this in a way a happy ending, because if it were not for the Dutch parliament raising this with the foreign ministry and the German embassy raising this and the fuss that was created around the story, I don't think we'd be lucky enough to have this podcast this morning with Sharafuddin.
Yeah. Very glad to know that Sharafuddin is back. Okay, so this was Sharafuddin's story, the story of an opposition activist who was taken by force to Tajikistan, kidnapped and tortured for speaking the truth to the authorities. But he is not the only one, as Steve just said. Also, he's not the only one whom the Tajik authorities kidnapped and tried to use to discredit the opposition, misguide the world, but ended up discrediting itself. We will continue the discussion talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis podcast. I'm joined by Sharafuddin Gadoyev, Tajik activist in exile, Victoria Nadezhdina, Sharafuddin's attorney, Mahmoudjon Fazlurahmon, spokesperson of Banned Islamic Renaissance Party of Tajikistan, Steve Sibadlu, Human Rights Watch's Central Asia researcher, Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Wazi. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing situation of Tajik opposition activists in the light of the kidnapping and release of Sharafuddin Gadoyev by the Tajik authorities. Welcome back. Okay, if Sharafuddin wants to stay, we are happy to have him. Otherwise, we can let him go. What do you say, Victoria?
He needs to go. Okay. Yeah. Unfortunately, he would like to stay, but he needs to continue his another interview. Okay. Thank you very much for the invitation and for your questions. Okay. I was happy to provide information.
Very nice to have him. Thank you. Thank you. Mahmoudjon, we heard Sharafuddin as a leading member of another Tajik opposition in exile. How much his story resonates in your life, in life of your colleagues, experiences of your colleagues?
I think we have tens of Sharafuddins in Tajikistan. Tens of activists were abducted and kidnapped and killed, disappeared. But we don't have more details about how they were tortured, how they kidnapped. But as Steve Svedlow said, we have the one case that we know how it happened. And I think it is very, very important that in this one case, we have a lot of illegal action done by the government, from kidnapping and, torture, beating up, on, forcing mother and the relatives. And every one of the activists find, the situation as similar to himself or herself, because such problems we daily face. For example, one of these things that Sharafuddin said, that in front of him, her mother was forced to speak against the opposition, and he said it was very painful. So I think every one of the activists has this similarity. The important thing that we have Sharafuddin return back, and we now know how they do this, how they kidnap, kill, and who are those who order the activists to be tortured and these things.
Yeah, definitely. We are going to expand the discussion into those lines a little bit later. Steve, you earlier kind of hinted, of course, Sharafuddin is not the only Tajik activist who faced this situation. Expand this story. Who else have gone through the similar experiences before Sharafuddin?
Yeah, and one of the unique features of Tajikistan's abysmal human rights record is that the security services, where we would see Tajikistan is relatively modest in its size and its power compared to, let's say, the Uzbekistans and the Kazakhstans and the Belaruses and the Russias, the Tajik security services use and leverage the relationships they have abroad to punch above their weight and to detain and sometimes actually successfully return people to the country. So we have seen this been an increasing technique that's been used, but it goes back some ways. I mean, it goes back even to 2009. We saw several opposition figures, starting with Mahmoud Ruzi Iskandarov, Nizamkhon Juraev, and then, it sort of picks up. That's in 2009, 2011. And then it picks up in 2014, 2015, when we see Group 24 becomes an opposition force that's viable in Russia. That's when the president, I think, really goes into panic mode. And by early 2015, we see some very disturbing cases. We see the stabbing and then the kidnapping and return to Tajikistan of an activist named Maksud Ibragimov, who later, again, like in this case, sort of miraculously appears in Dushanbe, confesses to his crimes, and is given 17 years. Then we see this happen later. A young blogger disappears in St. Petersburg in 2015. His name is Ekson Adnaev. We're still looking for him. And then as it expands outward, we see cases of people being detained in Belarus. And then we see in Turkey, just in this last year, three people detained One person returned, Namunjon Sharipov, returned to Tajikistan and also confesses. And then we see a footballer in Belarus who had a long beard and so therefore was considered to be a religious extremist. His name is Parviz Tursunov. He was detained in Belarus. So we see, and even in Moldova, places as far-flung as Moldova, we see the Tajik government really using whatever leverage it has to aggressively hunt its opponents. And I think the videos that we saw in Godoyev's case, the orchestrated videos, are a sign that the sort of paranoia seems to be increasing. And I think the authorities seem ever hell-bent on trying to convince the world that these are voluntary returns. But of course, they're really fooling no one.
Yeah. Bruce, let me bring you on here. Why are the Tajik authorities keep doing this? I mean, by now, whatever bad happens in or related to Tajikistan, the government version is not really considered the full fact anymore. We have seen this in Godoyev's forced confession with you earlier in the terrorist attack. Do the authorities even have any credibility anymore?
No, I mean, I'm going to have to say, you know, not. I can't imagine that anyone who's been following events in Tajikistan would take statements from any official in the Tajik government at face value anymore. You know, we saw this with the tragic attack on the bicyclists, you know, last July, where the Tajik authorities were quick to blame the Islamic Renaissance Party of Tajikistan for that. And within 48 hours of the attack, all of a sudden, you know, the ISIS had released a video, which clearly it was already in their possession before the attack. Of the attackers saying, you know, we're doing this and we're doing this on behalf of ISIS and everything. So and then the Tajik government, faced with that, tried to spin the story a little bit different and say, well, you know, there's a connection between the IRPT and ISIS, and which didn't seem to be very credible at all. And of course, now we have the Godoyev case, too. You know, where they made it look like he had voluntarily come back and, you know, he was repentant about some things and they wanted him to do a video denouncing, you know, Kabiri, the government supporting Rustam and Momwali, you know, and of course, now that Godoyev's out and has been speaking with us and other people, we find out, you know, that was just a total sham. It's kind of amazing that they're so paranoid about someone else having a different narrative than the one that the Tajik government is spinning all the time. It's been self-defeating for them. Yeah. If the Tajik government would just sit there and tell their own side of the story and say, you know, you can listen to these people if you want, but they were, you know, whatever, troublemakers or something when they were in Tajikistan, you shouldn't listen to them. But instead, the Tajik government has just been proven to be lying and fabricating things all the time. It's really worked against them. Yeah, you know, like I said, it certainly Western democratic governments, I couldn't imagine that anyone would take them seriously with any claims that they made about opposition figures anymore.
Let's get this from the first hand, Mahmoudjon. You guys must have experience in this. You know, when you meet with European or American partners explaining your position in regard to the Tajik government or situation in Tajikistan, what's your feeling? Is it easy to get your message across?
I think it was in the beginning when we were taken out of Tajikistan, our party was banned, and in 2015-16, it was much difficult. But every time, every day passed, and we have see that the government make a lot of mistakes, and there's the lack of credibility of the government of Tajikistan in front of others. So now it is for us a much easier easier to convince European, you know, colleagues or the Western colleagues. But before it was a much difficult. Today, Sharofuddin Gadoy said a very good remark that when they released first two videos in Tajikistan, and in the 3 days or the 4 days, they came and said, oh, people are not believing in our variant, what we are saying. So this is how they make mistakes, and these mistakes, you know, lose, you know, their credibility.
Yeah. Victoria, I would like to come back to you in a minute about, I believe you guys are planning some follow-up steps in regard to Sharafuddin's case. But before that, Steve, you mentioned earlier, I wonder, on one hand, there is not much credibility left that Tajik government can rely on when getting engaged in rough activities abroad, like the kidnapping of Sharafuddin Godoyev or killing of Kuatov, and the Tajik authorities doesn't have much leverage abroad in any front. It doesn't have much money to spend on, but it is so strange that it finds partners to work with. when it comes to such horrible actions. How come? I mean, what explains that?
Well, you know, I think Russia has always been, for 25 years now, has been, in a way, you know, really, you know, the security services among all the Central Asian governments and really with Russia at the helm. And now, I guess, even with the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, has been stepping up their coordination, their extraditions, their returns. And it seems to be in the interest of all authoritarians to sort of band together in this paranoid fashion to repress whatever they perceive to be as threats to their interests, whether it's, you know, Tajik opposition or it's journalists or it's human rights activists. But, you know, I think the Tajik case is interesting because in some ways, as I said in the beginning, it's a more grotesque, a more peculiar face of a crackdown when you see these strange videos. And I think the orchestrated videos do almost as much damage to Tajikistan's reputation as, you know, Berdimuhamedov's music videos coming out of Turkmenistan. It really shows a level of isolation. And I think that's what's, you know, really, really threatening stability in Tajikistan. These last 5 years, the crackdown has gotten worse, the isolation has gotten greater, the cult of personality has increased. And these sort of actions on the international scene, which are, you know, erratic and strange, seem to really, you know, I think pose a great risk to the future of Tajikistan. So we really need international actors to step up and push for accountability and make very clear that any officials involved in these sorts of things are going to be put on lists and are going to be denied visas. And, you know, we should see an end to these things.
That's exactly my next point leads me. You know, I understand Tajik authorities finds natural alliance with other authoritarian countries like Russia, like Belarus or some other countries. But what explains the fact that when even there's a clear-cut connection between a horrible action like a kidnapping of Sharafuddin with the Tajik government, but that Tajik government gets away with it after committing these kind of outrageous crimes? How is that possible?
Can I just say one more thing on this point, which is that, yes, they are getting away with a lot of these abuses, and we have to remember that there are hundreds of political prisoners. There are lawyers imprisoned in Tajikistan, and there have been, you know, murders which have been left unsolved. But one thing that is also interesting about Tajikistan is maybe given its economic situation or its relative small size or its dependence on international organizations, we're not exactly sure, but they have been responsive to the outcries of both the international community and even social media campaigns in the last 6 months. We saw Bruce knows this case really well, of the journalist that was given a 12-year sentence, and then within a month he had been released due to a great stir on social media. His name is Khairul Mirsaidov. Yes, and then we had two children who were banned from leaving Tajikistan in July and August, who were later allowed to leave. That was Hamza and Fatima. And so we have seen the Tajik government actually, strangely enough, give way to pressure in a way we haven't seen from the other Central Asian governments, which gives me a little bit of hope.
Bruce, you have a theory in this. Would you like to jump in?
Yeah, I mean, clearly, I agree with what Steve just said there, is that I have been amazed just since last summer, that when enough international attention is focused on some of these misdeeds or bad decisions by the Tajik government, they have shown that they're willing to back off some of this stuff. You know, that obviously the country is in need of all the support it can get. But, you ask your question was, how are they able to get away with this at all? As much as Western pressure and or the wider international community's pressure is on help is helpful in getting just decisions out of the Tajik government.
But
they're still backed by China and Russia.
Yeah,
where all the money's coming
from.
Yeah,
what I was saying is, like, it is a credit to the NGO communities, for example, journalists who are launching this social media campaigns in favor of those journalists and these kids, for example, who at the end got released. And this was thanks to the NGO community. But what about the Western democratic governments in Europe elsewhere? Why reaction is not coming from them?
I think, you know, Mr. Godoyev even mentioned that the Netherlands and Germany were instrumental in his release. And we know that President of Luxembourg, was it, that was supposed to visit Tajikistan and canceled?
Foreign minister.
The foreign minister of Luxembourg canceled. You know, and then the Tajik government, again, not helping themselves at all, said that made some vague statement about Rahman not feeling well. You know, but so there was Western pressure in this case. And we know that other governments, the U.S., the U.K., have certainly brought this issue up much more quietly in the past have had conversations and released their own statements too, urging the Tajik government to reconsider. But certainly, you know, that's what it's a strange situation where it's like the Tajik government knows that they have a black reputation, but when it's actually aired in front of a lot of people, you know, gets a lot of publicity, you know, that's when they really start to back off at least a little bit on some of this stuff. Like I said, they know things are going bad and going wrong for them.
Let's bring on Victoria, you on here. I mean, you guys are now preparing to take some follow-up steps on Sharafuddin's case. First, I want to hear about that. And also, when you are planning to do that, what kind of support are you getting from whom?
Yes, of course. We are not going to stop at this point, and we want to proceed further and to use this opportunity of happy end of Sharafuddin and his release, being him as real witness of what is happening within these regimes of two countries, being like on his own experience, going through all these horrible situations and violations of human rights. He wants to tell. Everybody wants to tell the world the reality of these countries. And we aim to go to prosecutor in the Netherlands and to prosecutor in Russia. And of course, we aim to bring all the people who involved in arranging and in implementation of this bad plan to responsibility. And our next step will be applying to European Court for Human Rights. So as for now, Ministry of Foreign Affairs of the Netherlands closing the case at their level, and with their advice and with their support, the case will be transferred to prosecutor of the Netherlands, and with whom we will have the full investigation of what happened in Russia and in Tajikistan, and afterward we will go to the court.
Mm-hmm. Are you happy from the type of support you are getting so far from various parties?
Yes, I can see the real involvement and real care of from Dutch side and as well as from German. I know that the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Germany really helped, involved, and actually officially represented Netherlands in Tajikistan, considering that there is no embassy of the Netherlands in Tajikistan. And the ambassador of Germany met with the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Tajikistan, so they really did lots of work on this case.
Yeah.
Mohammed, I just want to mention one other point, which I find really significant, again, that's Tajik specific, is that, you know, we saw in this past week of these videos that a number of other people that have been returned forcibly, some, and maybe in other cases pressured or semi-voluntarily came back to the country, were appearing in these videos as former opposition and saying that everything's great, come on back to the country, we're all doing fine, we're sitting down, we're having a dastarkhan, we're enjoying life. And what was so surreal about that, and I think, again, so out of touch with basic reality, is that at the very moment when, you know, Godoyev is being forced to tell the world and the opposition to come back, you know, there are dozens, hundreds of other political prisoners who haven't been released. And how the government can, on the one hand, balance that message of, on the one hand, say everything's great, but on the other hand, we're keeping these other guys in prison, was, you know, I think it just reminds us that, again, what made Godoyev different was his European status. And so we need to work doubly hard to make sure that all those other people that don't have that advantage will be able to be freed.
Yeah. Godoyev's case was a little bit different given the stats that he had in Europe. But the others that you mentioned, they are stuck in Tajikistan under horrible, terrible conditions. Does this give you a kind of, an opening expectation that something good might come out of them? Because, you know, you got a couple of kids out and the journalist out, now Godoyev is out.
I certainly hope so. I mean, I think that there are some important nexuses here that, you know, are relevant to different international actors. So in the case of the European Parliament, they have already issued a resolution a few years ago, which we hope to get renewed, which does call for targeted sanctions against Tajik officials that engage in torture and kidnappings. And I think the Godoyev case is so brazen and it touches on Europe that we should. I think that will be an opportunity to go back to the European Parliament. But in terms of the U.S. government, I think the continuing crackdown on religious freedom is very important, especially for this State Department and this president. And, you know, Tajikistan is on the list of countries of particular concern, the so-called CPCs, which is a special list of abusers. And I think this, again, because it links to the Islamic Renaissance Party of Tajikistan, I think it's another hook and another way in which Tajikistan can be sort of brought to account for its abuses.
There are so many things to talk about. So what would take this campaign, this momentum, let's say, to a next step?
I think Mr. Rahmon, Emmanuel Rahmon, and his government, do not learn from their mistakes. For example, if you see the case of, it was during this, Godoy was in Tajikistan, Mr. Rahmon apparently met this journalist. But in fact, they were, the mercenaries, which is called by Tajiks, Fabrikay Jawab. This is, they have very bad reputation among Tajiks, and they are very active in social medias and this. And Mr. Rahmon, in spite to find some, solutions for the situation, and he, and his government make the situation worse, and, met these mercenaries, and, there was a lot of, discussion in this case. So I think Mr. Rahmon himself declared a media war or informative war, and it is very, unfortunate that this happens, and we will see in the future, and we are now feeling this meeting of Mr. Rahmon with these mercenaries, the results we are feeling in social medias, unfortunately.
You are talking about scary stuff, Mahmoud-chan. What keeps you awake at night?
I think that the government, I think must think how to logically solve this problem. They did made mistakes when they, banned the party. Now they are lost their credibility, and they are international and inside Tajikistan level. So I think, unfortunately, what we say that they don't think about any logical discussion. In spite they are making mistakes and don't learn from their mistakes. That is what we fear.
Okay, I think we are way over time. Let's take, Bruce, your final point. So what are the lessons is there to learn from Sharafuddin? In his case now going forward?
Well, there's a lot here for sure. The one thing that really disturbs me about this is that that there was such insistence on the Russian part that Mukhadin Kabiri accompany Sharafuddin there. And that was, that just shows how blind sometimes the Tajik authorities are to what's going on. And what was their plan? If Kabiri had gone, were they going to kidnap them both and bring them both to Tajikistan? And then what would have happened? I don't think we would have seen the, the propaganda video that Sharafuddin was forced to make, because obviously what they want to do is put Kabiri in prison. Now, that would have been a public relations disaster for the Tajik government. But clearly, it seems logically that was part of their plan. I don't know what they would get out of that at all. The condemnation would be far more harmful to the government than any local feeling of ease they might have gotten about putting a leading opposition figure finally in a Tajik prison. And there's another thing that Sharafuddin has mentioned in the interview that he gave today, and he mentioned in interviews that he gave yesterday too, that he was convinced that someone told him that Rustam Emomali was going to succeed Rahmon in next year's elections. Now, that would sort of explain why the Tajik government is kind of easing off on some of these cases, because what they're going to need, if that's true, what they're going to need is international recognition of this transition of power. And given their horrifying record in the last, as Steve said, 5 years, I would say that's probably inaccurate. I mean, they've really gone downhill, certainly since 2014, where they're competing with Turkmenistan for rock bottom as far as rights abuser in Central Asia. But they're going to have to do something to improve their image a little bit, because if that is true, they're going to put a 32-year-old in the president's seat. And a lot of governments are going to have a lot of problems with that. So they got to do something to clean up their image. But like I said, this latest fiasco shows that they're just blind sometimes with their obsession about getting some of these opposition figures and keeping them quiet.
Yeah. Okay, terrific. Victoria, we didn't have much chance to talk about. I wonder whether you, as an attorney, had a chance to work on something about Tajikistan before?
Yes, I personally do a monitoring of human rights on Tajikistan for the last 2 years. And what I can notice is that the situation with human rights dramatically worsened from year to year, from month to month. And really, this only the good things that we saw with these two children and the release of a journalist last year due to international pressure. But in general, on the really wide directions of human rights are being worsened and worsened. Yeah, it's a difficult situation.
It's a sad story. Okay, terrific. Thank you very much, Victoria Nadezhdina, Sharafuddin Gadoyev's attorney. And also big thanks to Sharafuddin Gadoyev, the Tajik activist in exile who was kidnapped, tortured, and just released by the Tajik authorities. And Mahmoud Jan Faiz Rahman, spokesperson of Banned Islamic Renaissance Party of Tajikistan. Steve Severlu, Human Rights Watch Central Asia researcher. Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Uwazi. Thank you, colleagues, for your time. And that's day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberties, Central Asia podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.